A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
170 acres of working farm, a red barn, grazing dairy cows, and a 180-degree view of the Willimantic River Valley. And it draws hundreds of visitors every single day, not because it's a park, not because it's a preserve, but because locals decided it was theirs. Daniel wants to know how Horse Barn Hill became Horse Barn Hill. The acronym, the phenomenon, the thing people drive across the state to see at sunset. And he's asking the question that's been sitting behind this whole thing since the beginning. How many other Horse Barn Hill grade sites are we walking past every day without noticing?
This is the kind of question that, I grew up in stores, right? I walked that hill before it was HBH, before anyone called it that. And Daniel's asking us to reverse engineer something that most people experience as just a feeling. You go up there, you stand by the fence, the cows are doing absolutely nothing, and somehow it works. It works on you.
So reverse engineer it. What's the recipe?
Start with what it actually is, because that's the part most people get wrong. Horse Barn Hill isn't a park. It's not preserved open space. It's 170 acres of active teaching farm operated by UConn's College of Agriculture, Health, and Natural Resources. The dairy cows are real working animals. The sheep are real. The horses are real. The barn is a functioning agricultural building, not a visitor center with a gift shop. And that matters.
It matters because authenticity is doing work here that a manicured park can't replicate.
I mean, yes, that's the first layer. But the puzzle Daniel's pointing at is, stores is surrounded by farmland. You can drive 10 minutes in any direction and find a hill with cows on it. Why did this specific hill earn a nickname, a social media presence, a place in the regional imagination, while every other field stays anonymous?
The dairy bar.
The dairy bar is part of it, but let's build the layers in order. The physical site first. Horse Barn Hill sits at the edge of campus, but it feels separate. You walk up a gravel road and the built environment drops away behind you. The hill's orientation gives you that 180-degree sweep of the Willimantic River Valley, and at sunset the whole thing lights up in a way that, I've seen it 100 times and it still stops me.
You're describing a stage. The view is the backdrop. The barn is the set piece. The cows are the cast.
And the barn itself. It's a classic New England dairy barn, painted that specific red, and it anchors the whole visual composition. You can take a photo from almost any angle, and the barn gives you a focal point. Without it, you've just got a nice hill with a nice view, and Connecticut has about 400 of those.
So the barn is doing compositional work. It turns a landscape into a photograph.
Right. Now layer in the institutional piece. UConn has maintained this as a working farm for over a century. They never turned it into something else, never sold it off, never built dorms on it, never decided the land was too valuable for cows. And the university has an open campus policy. Anyone can walk up there any day, no permit, no gate. That combination, long-term stewardship plus unrestricted access, is rarer than people think.
Most universities would have paved it by now.
Most universities did. That's the point. UConn didn't, and the result is a site that feels like it belongs to everyone because, functionally, it does. Now add the third ingredient, which is the one you jumped to, the dairy bar.
I jumped to it because it's the thing everyone knows. UConn Dairy Bar ice cream is legendary in Connecticut. People drive from Fairfield County to get it. That's an hour and a half each way.
And the dairy bar sits at the base of Horse Barn Hill. 5-minute walk. So the pattern is, get ice cream, walk up the hill, take photos, come back down. Or the reverse, walk the hill, reward yourself with ice cream. The two sites create a feedback loop. Neither one would draw the same crowds alone, but together they make a destination. You can't do just one. It feels incomplete.
That's a real mechanism. The ice cream gives you a reason to be there that isn't the view, and the view gives you something to do after the ice cream besides get back in the car.
And that loop generates dwell time. People stay longer than they'd at either site alone. Longer dwell time means more photos. More photos means more social media, which brings us to the fourth ingredient.
Instagrammability.
Horse Barn Hill is photogenic in every season. Green pastures in summer, fall foliage against the red barn, snow-covered fields in winter, misty spring mornings with the cows half visible, and the view is consistent. You know what you're going to get. That reliability matters for word of mouth. You can tell someone, go at sunset, and they'll get the same thing you got. No disappointment, no, you should have been here last week.
That's underrated. A lot of beautiful places are unreliable. The light has to be right. The season has to be right. You need clouds or you need no clouds. Horse Barn Hill delivers the same shot every time, and that makes it recommendable.
It's become a staple of Yukon Instagram accounts, stores community pages, Connecticut travel content, graduation photos, engagement photos, family photos. The barn is in the background of thousands of people's most important memories. And that creates a self-reinforcing cycle. You see the photos, you go take your own, the next person sees yours.
Fifth ingredient, the name.
Horse Barn Hill. It tells you exactly what you're going to see. There's a horse barn on a hill, no poetry, no branding committee, and then the acronym, HBH, signals insider status. Locals use it, students use it. If you call it HBH, you belong. That's a real piece of identity formation around a place.
It's the shibboleth. You say Horse Barn Hill to a tourist. You say HBH to someone who's been there.
And the name is specific in a way that Campus Hill or the pasture wouldn't be. It's distinctive enough to travel. You can tell someone in New Haven, go to Horse Barn Hill, and they can find it. You can't tell them, go to the field behind the ag school.
So we've got five ingredients. Physical stage with a compositional anchor. Institutional stewardship that keeps it authentic and open. A complementary attraction that creates a feedback loop. Photogenic reliability across seasons. And a name that sticks and signals belonging. That's the formula.
And here's what's interesting. Compare it to the Yukon Forest. Much larger natural area, also on campus, also open to the public. Gets a fraction of the foot traffic. Why? No barn, no cows, no view that photographs the same way, no ice cream at the trailhead. Same institution, same open access policy, completely different outcome.
The forest is missing four of the five ingredients. It's got the stewardship, and that's it.
So Daniel's question, how many other Horse Barn Hill grade sites are we walking past, becomes, how many sites have two or three of these ingredients and just need the rest?
That's the thing. The formula suggests the gap between overlooked and iconic is narrower than we think. A lot of places are one ingredient away.
Let's test that. Take any college town. There's a hill somewhere. There's a pond. There's a field. Most of them have the physical ingredient, a visually striking natural feature. Some have institutional stewardship, especially if they're on university land or in a town trust. What they're usually missing is the complementary attraction and the name.
The dairy bar is doing an enormous amount of work here. If you removed it from the equation, Horse Barn Hill is just a nice walk.
And the dairy bar itself is an institution. It's been there since the 1950s. The ice cream is made from the milk of the campus herd, the same cows you just walked past on the hill. That connection. You see the cows, then you eat the ice cream made from their milk. That's a closed loop. It's almost too perfect.
It's a story you can tell in one sentence. That's what makes it travel.
So if we're applying the formula to other sites, the question is, what's the dairy bar equivalent? It doesn't have to be ice cream. It could be a farmer's market, a food truck, a brewery, a cafe. Something that gives people a reason to be there that isn't the view, and that connects to the site in a way that feels organic rather than forced.
The connection has to be real. You can't just drop a Starbucks next to a scenic overlook and call it a day. The dairy bar works because the cows are right there. The ice cream is literally from the hill.
Right, and that brings us to the counterintuitive part of this. Horse Barn Hill's success isn't about being the best view in Connecticut. It's not even the best view in stores. The Yukon Depot campus area has similar views, same valley, same orientation. But no barn, no ice cream, no name recognition. Same landscape, different ecosystem.
Quality matters less than the ecosystem around the site. That's the headline.
And that's encouraging because you can't make a view better than it is, but you can build an ecosystem. A path, a sign, a partnership with a nearby food vendor, a social media presence, small, deliberate interventions.
There's a historical parallel here. Mount Tom in Holyoke, Massachusetts. Similar hill with a view situation. became iconic in the late 19th century through a combination of a summit hotel, a railroad that brought visitors up, and later a state park. Different era, same pattern. The view was always there, but it took layered ingredients to turn it into a destination.
The railroad was the dairy bar of its day. It solved the access problem and made the trip feel like an event.
So the formula generalizes. It's not unique to Horsebound Hill, and it's not unique to the social media era. The ingredients change. A railroad becomes an Instagram account, but the structure is the same.
Now, there's a dark side to this, and Daniel's question implicitly asks about it. Iconic status creates overuse. Horsebound Hill has erosion problems from heavy foot traffic. Parking congestion is a real issue. There are occasional conflicts between visitors and farm operations. People walking into areas they shouldn't, disturbing livestock, that kind of thing.
Success creates maintenance challenges that anonymous fields don't face.
And that's a knock-on effect worth naming. If you apply the formula to an overlooked site and it works, you now have to manage the consequences of it working. The university has to maintain the paths, manage the parking, protect the animals, deal with the trash. Those are real costs.
Which means the formula isn't just add ice cream, receive tourists. There's a stewardship layer that has to scale with the popularity.
And that's where the institutional ingredient becomes critical. UConn can absorb those costs in a way that a small town or a private landowner might not be able to. The open campus policy works because there's a maintenance budget behind it.
So the lesson isn't, make every hill a tourist attraction. It's that the gap between overlooked and iconic is often a handful of deliberate, small-scale decisions. A paint color, a path, a partnership with a food vendor, a name that sticks.
The barn was repainted a specific shade of red in 2002, chosen by a committee. That's not a romantic detail, but it's exactly the kind of thing that matters. Someone sat in the room and decided what color red would photograph best.
A committee chose the red. That's going to sit with me.
It should, because it's the whole argument in microcosm. The hill was always there. The view was always there. But someone decided to paint the barn a specific red, and that decision is part of why thousands of graduation photos have a perfect focal point in the background.
So Daniel's question, how many other Horsebound Hill grade sites are we walking past? The answer is, more than we think, and they're mostly one or two decisions away from being discovered.
Let me give you a way to test this. Next time you're driving through a town and you see a hill with a nice view, ask yourself, what's missing? Is there a place to park? Is there a path? Is there somewhere nearby to get food? Does it have a name you'd remember? Most of the time, the answer is no to at least three of those.
If the answer is yes to all of them, you're probably already looking at someone's Horsebound Hill.
The formula is replicable, but it requires intentionality. Communities have to decide that a site is worth investing in, and that decision usually comes from someone who just loves the place. Someone who walked up there one evening and thought, this should be for everyone.
That's the part the formula doesn't capture. The first ingredient is always someone who cares.
That's not reproducible. You can't committee your way into genuine affection for a place. The committee can choose the paint color, but the love has to come first.
We've got the formula, we've got the caveats, we've got the dark side. The thing I keep coming back to is how fragile this all is. If UConn had sold that land in the 1980s, if the dairy bar had closed, if someone had decided the barn should be beige.
Beige?
The whole thing unravels. HBH isn't inevitable. It's the result of 100 small decisions that could have gone differently.
That's what makes it worth studying. Not because it's a perfect place. It's a working farm with erosion problems and parking headaches, but because it's a case study in how a place becomes a place, how a hill with cows becomes a shared identity.
The next time you walk past a hill, a field, a pond, ask yourself what one ingredient would turn it into someone's Horsebound Hill.
The answer is usually smaller than you think.
15 minutes.
Shh. What?
The light. You talked about the sunset photos, the golden quality. It's not just the view. The hill's orientation means it catches the last light of the day about 15 minutes longer than the surrounding valleys. The ridgeline to the west drops away just enough. I walked that fence line at dusk every evening one summer, and the light lingered. You could watch the valley go dark while the hilltop was still gold.
You walked the fence line.
Summer job, late 90s. Grounds assistant, Department of Animal Science. Maintained the fences, cleared the paths, kept people from walking into the bullpen. Before it was HBH. Before anyone called it anything except the pasture.
You were there when it was just a hill with cows.
It was never just a hill with cows. The light was always like that. The barn was always red. Well, it was a different red. They repainted it in 2002. Committee chose the color. Sherwin-Williams, custom match. They tested 4 shades on the east wall before they picked one. You can still see the test patches if you know where to look. They didn't prime properly.
I walked past that barn 100 times and never noticed test patches.
Bottom left corner, east wall, behind the third fence post. Faded now. But the new red photographs better. The old red was flatter, more brown in it.
The committee was right.
The committee was right about the color. They didn't know about the light. Nobody talked about the 15 minutes. I mentioned it once to my supervisor, and he said, huh, and went back to his clipboard.
Is that a measurable phenomenon, or just your memory?
It's measurable. The hill's elevation is only about 150 feet above the valley floor, but the ridge line to the west is lower than the hilltop. So when the sun drops behind the ridge, the valley is in shadow, but the hilltop is still in direct light. It's not 15 minutes everywhere on the hill. The western slope goes dark first. The barn holds the light longest. The barn is positioned exactly where the light lasts.
Nobody designed that.
Nobody designed it. The barn was built where it was built because that's where the well was. The light was an accident.
An accident that thousands of sunset photos have depended on.
That's most of what makes a place. Accidents that someone eventually notices.
Then a committee picks a paint color to match the accident.
That's the part you got right. The formula. It's real. But the first ingredient isn't on your list. It's time. The hill was there for decades before anyone thought to take a picture of it. The dairy bar was there for 40 years before someone connected the two in their mind and told a friend. These things take longer than anyone wants to admit.
Which is the hardest ingredient to replicate?
You can't rush it. You can paint the barn. You can build the path. You can open the ice cream stand. But the thing where a place sinks into people's lives, that's just years. You can't committee your way out of waiting.
The formula is 5 ingredients plus time, and the time is the one you can't control.
I'd say the formula is 5 ingredients, and the time is the container they sit in. Without the container, you've got a nice view and good ice cream and a red barn, and nobody who feels like it's theirs.
That's actually a better way to put it than anything we said.
I had a lot of time to think on that fence line.
The question Daniel's left us with is whether communities can do this deliberately. Whether you can decide to make a horse barn hill, or whether it has to happen to you.
I think Hilbert just answered that. You can do the deliberate parts. The paint, the path, the partnership. But the part where it becomes a shared identity, where people start using the acronym without thinking about it, that part you have to wait for.
Steward, in the meantime, keep the fences up, keep the cows healthy, keep the ice cream good, so that when the time is past, there's still something worth belonging to.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer Hilbert Flumingtop for keeping the fences up.
If you have a local landmark that deserves the Horse Barn Hill treatment, or if you've got a correction for Hilbert's 15-minute golden hour claim, send it to prompts@myweirdprompts.com. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.